This audio interview has been enhanced by software from www.speedupmymp3.com. MP3 your way, speed you control.
Hi, I'm Michael Sell, founder and CEO of HardToFindSeminars.com. For the last 5 years, I've interviewed the world's best business and marketing minds. Along the way, I've created a successful publishing business all from home from my two-car garage. When my first child was born, he was very sick, and it was then that I knew I had to have a business that I could operate from home. Now my challenge is to build the world's largest free resource for online, downloadable audio business interviews. I knew I needed a site that contained strategies, solutions, and inside angles to help you live better, to save and make more money, to stay healthier, and to get more out of life. I've learned a lot in the last 5 years, and today I'm going to show you the skills you need to survive.
One of the things you always deal with is the king of the kingdom, right? Where they think they know everything. They're the king of their operations. Actually, it's a company that has investment from investors overseas. You know, they're losing money, but the CEO thinks they know everything. Well, the fact of the matter is that they need to listen, and we tell them, and we're very direct. Remember, transactional selling, we have to be professionally blunt. You can see that surgeon in the corner that says, Paul, do you want your eye back in your head? Let me tell you what you have to do. And sometimes it's going to hurt.
Hi, it's Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. The title of this interview is called Picking the Brain of a Heavyweight CEO Coach, How to Develop a Peer-to-Peer Relationship with the Decision-Maker and Communicate Value Upfront. Paul DeMotica is the founder of the Value Forward Group, a worldwide management consulting firm. Based on 20 years' experience as a VP of Sales and Marketing, Strategy, Operations, and as a COO, he's created the Value Forward Method, a 360-degree business value assessment and implementation approach that integrates financial management, marketing methodology, sales process, corporate strategy, and operations to help companies grow. An independent network of the Value Forward Group coaches advise CEOs on the action steps to take to grow revenues, consult with management staff on the best practices, and train sales and marketing teams on tactics and strategies that work. Employing a holistic approach, they assess and make strategic and tactical recommendations on marketing, branding, strategy, sales process, sales management, operations, product service pricing and naming, business metrics, management reporting, compensation plans, company name, marketing gap analysis, partnerships, and new business opportunities. Paul has worked with Microsoft, Tyco, IBM, and AT&T among other global giants. Paul's BDM management newsletter has over 160,000 weekly subscribers worldwide. Although Paul's clients are pretty high-end, the techniques Paul describes are just as invaluable to you, the HMA consultant. They will enable you to communicate value upfront, find clients, shorten your HMA sales cycle, present like a pro, and close deals. In this interview, you're going to learn exactly what to say to a prospect over the phone and in person. You'll learn how to find and deal with the decision maker and develop a peer-to-peer relationship. You'll learn the 7 stages of client commitment. You'll learn to never discount, but always offer different option prices to accommodate a range of budgets. You'll learn how you can become an expert in any industry in less than 5 minutes. You'll learn to practice according to your value and why lowballing hurts your business. You'll learn why action is more important than strategy and much, much more. In this value-packed interview, I get Paul to walk you step-by-step through the sales process from letter to contract, step-by-step with detailed explanations all along the way. Paul charges thousands of dollars per hour for this information, and in this interview, I'm handing it to you, my HMA consultants, on a silver platter. The purpose of this interview is to show you the potential of your consulting business, to give you a wide range of experiences from other high-end, successful marketing consultants. Enjoy the interview. So, Paul, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to my HMA consultants. If I was to say, what do you do in relationship to consulting? And I guess when I say what do you do, what is Value Forward all about?
The Value Forward method is an integrated method for companies to increase corporate revenue at an accelerated rate. What we do is we integrate financial management, marketing, sales, and strategy into one outbound revenue capture program all at the same time. In many ways, it's like a holistic approach to revenue capture. We do not work at a department level. We work at the CEO level specifically. We focus on CEOs that have annual revenues of $2 million all the way up to $200
million. After hearing you say, I need you to break it down for me. When you say revenue capture, give me an example. What do you mean? Because it sounds impressive, but I don't quite understand.
Okay, well, from a revenue capture point of view, one of the things that we focus in on is how do you go out and grow the top line revenue of your company, total sales, and then what's the market that you're going to go after? How do you price your product? How do you name your product? How do you identify new market gaps? So what happens in most companies, revenues are going down. They blame the sales team. And historically, that's a silo approach, and that usually doesn't work because you could have the wrong strategy or the wrong marketing, train the sales team 5 times, and still have revenues go down.
What's a silo approach?
A silo approach is when you have the marketing manager doing what they want, the sales department doing what they want, and the CEO making up the business model in the back room without telling anybody.
So no one's communicating?
Yeah, it's very common. It's common in all size companies. You know, we consult with global 100 companies at the divisional level. We consult with CEOs at the 200 line. And it's amazing how many companies have a siloed approach to revenue capture or top-line revenue growth.
All right, so you're talking to CEOs with a gross sales of $200 million.
Yeah, and under.
And so how do you categorize that type of company? Is that a medium-sized company or a very large?
To us, we call it a small to medium-sized market. So we focus on working with CEOs of 5 million, 10 million, 50 million, 100 million. Now, our methods are unique enough that we do work at the billion-dollar company level, and we coach the vice presidents and general managers of a multi-billion-dollar company. But we really focus on working with the CEO specifically at that 50 million, 100 million, and 200 million dollars.
So let's say a $100 million company. From some of the CEOs you've worked with, how many employees, how large of a company is that? Can you put it in perspective?
Yeah, that might be 500, 700 employees, depending on what kind of industry you're in, 1,000 employees.
So your consulting group is specifically working with the CEO. That's the main man, the decision maker.
That's the only person we work with in our introduction.
Well, why wouldn't you work with someone else in the company?
Well, the problem is that when you have a department manager working with you, they don't have the total capacity to change or adjust the company model. They only have the ability to change their model. So again, you get back to sort of a silo or department management approach, which many times companies don't grow as quickly, not because their department's not doing the job, but because the other departments in your company are doing something different.
So have you ever worked with CEOs that want to put it off on a department manager and say, hey, just work with this guy, and it turns out to be a bad experience?
We do. In fact, one of the things we look at is we focus on working with the CEO from the top down. We do have other department managers come into the executive discussions, the vice president of sales, the vice president of marketing, maybe CFO, and a large company CIO, but we always actively coach the CEO on best practices recommendation, and then they assign the lower-level department managers the goals and objectives that we set for the CEO.
Okay, so for the benefit of my HMA consultants, they're out there working with probably a lot of smaller companies and the smaller mom-and-pop businesses, maybe a little bit larger than that. Could you give them advice on why it's important to work with a decision-maker?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, action is more important than strategy. And so if you're working with a department manager, they may be excited that you're going to help them make their department more successful. But, you know, businesses are like organic animals. They have to grow based on all the legs walking in the same direction. So when you work with just a department manager who is maybe a decision influencer, not the decision maker at the management level like a CEO, the fact of the matter is you can't fix that company as quickly or as holistically as possible. So you're working with a department manager. So it's a $2 million, $3 million company. The problem is they may love everything that you coach them on, and then they sit in the executive meeting and the CEO says, no, we're not going to do that. Well, all the investment they just made with you has been wasted, and the return on investment is going to be minimized. And you could have done a great job as a coach, but failed because you're dealing with the wrong people.
Okay, now I asked you to dumb down your description, and we identified that you're working with CEOs only of very large companies, $200 million and more, even an example of up to a billion. What's the big promise? What are you promising these guys?
We're promising them that they're going to increase their total top-line revenues and decrease operating costs.
So there's a cost reduction step in there.
There is.
Why don't you break down some of the segments of some of the areas you are going to look at when you get with the company to do this? How do you break it down?
We actually have pre-developed questionnaires, client assessments, and scorecards where we analyze each individual department separately. Then we look for the gaps between where the departments don't work. So we're going to walk into the sales department. We're going to analyze their compensation plans, their sales approach, their sales process. We're going to look at the markets that they're going after. We're going to look at the vertical industries that they're going to focus in on. Then we're going to walk into the marketing department. We're going to analyze all of their web communications, their emails, their newsletters, their brochures, their PowerPoints, their branding, their strategic positioning. Then we're going to walk into the financial department. And we actually have a proprietary financial database analysis tool where we can go in and take the basic financials of any company and get a business-by-business comparison of their financials against 50 to 300 other competitors in the market space. And they kick out an automatic financial analysis of their business as compared to their competitors in the same geography that they operate in. Then we also go into the corporate strategy. Who are they selling? Why do they sell that market? What product or service do they sell? How do they place that product and that service they sell? We even look at the company name. About 15% of all the privately held companies we work with, by the time we're done working with them, actually change the company name. And in a privately held world, that's a very big thing because I have a granddaddy who started the company 20 years ago, and then today, the son or the grandson's working in business, and the name might be totally wrong, but there's so much emotional attachment to it that they don't want to change it. By the time we go in and look at department by department first, and then holistically from the top down, all the departments, how they're aligned together, we've really done a complete analysis of their business. And then we go tell the CEO, this is what we found, and these are the areas you need to fix.
Why don't you take me through an example of a client? Take me through something that possibly came to you through maybe cold calling or a cold prospecting method, which ended up in maybe a call on the phone, then an appointment, then a presentation, then you sign the client, the CEO, then he became on the same side as you, and what he has to say to his sales team, his marketing team, his financial department to get everyone in a frame of mind that we're going to make some changes around here. Can we start from the process as an example?
Yes, we actually have direct sales letters that we've developed that are aimed specifically at the CEO.
Is this your primary way of generating clients?
No, we have 15 clients. It's one of many of you.
Right, well, take me an example through a direct sales letter. Basically, what did the letter say?
There are really three when you're talking to the CEO, and it doesn't matter if it's a $500,000 company, a $5 million company, or a $500 million company. There are only four business drivers that make them take action steps. Only four, and this is based on best practices research. So when you write a sales letter, it has to communicate one of these four drivers. One, your product or service that you're going to sell them is going to increase their total corporate income. Or two, your product or service is going to decrease their expenses. Or three, your product or service is going to help them manage business risks and consequences. Or four, your product or service is going to make them feel happy, informed, fuzzy about themselves.
What do they say is the strongest driver out of this?
Actually, number three is the most strongest driver. Your product or service is going to help them manage business risks or consequences, which is fear. At the end of the day, the one number one driver that has no budget is fear. So when you're talking to corporate managers, one of the things specifically a CEO is you want to drive them based on a fear of not being successful or not making as much money as they're going to make next year because of a recession or that the competitors are going to steal market share. That one driver basically drives them to take action steps, and fear has no budget. In fact, one of the reasons why you should only be talking to CEOs is department managers are the only people who have budgets. CEOs never have budgets. So when you talk to a department manager, it could be a manager of marketing, manager of sales, manager of finance. You know, they have a department, they have some kind of expenditure that they're allocated on an annualized basis. But if you go in and you try to propose consulting to them and it's outside that budget, they may have to go sit in a committee and talk to their boss. It doesn't matter again if it's a family-run business doing a half million dollars a year or a $100 million company. But when you go to the CEO or the president or the business owner, regardless of the title, they don't have budgets. They just take money from departments. So if you go in and they've not budgeted for what you're trying to sell them, they will find the money if you can communicate value. Because price has to equal value. Once it's out, they always find it.
So your direct mail letter, how is that geared towards fear? And in a nutshell, what does it say and what is the sales letter trying to accomplish?
Well, we send out the letter and it says, "Dear Mr. CEO, are your sales revenues down? Are your marketing costs up? And are you concerned that next year you won't be as successful as you were last year?" We use that as sort of a heading. And in the letter, we'll put bullets and statistics of some of the clients we had from Success Point with testimonials, and we send the letter out to FedEx. And then we follow up with a phone call, and we use sort of a percentage gain to follow up with them and say, "Listen, we're a CEO business coach. We're here to help you drive your profit, increase your business success. It's a down economy. What are you doing different this year versus last year?" And we follow up with a telemarketing call, and from that, we look for a 20-minute to a half-hour meeting.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. All right, let me stop here. Let's go back to you. It's really important. All right, first, before I get to the Federal Express letter, I want to ask you, when you choose the names of the companies, what are you trying to qualify as a name to send this letter out to? What are you looking for specifically that identifies a good prospect, a good name to mail? Are you looking for specific industries? Are you staying away from specific types of businesses? What's ideal for you, and who are you mailing this Federal Express letter to?
Generally, we're seeking companies that do $2 million to $200 million. We're looking for the CEO's name, and we prefer a privately held company. Because in a public environment, you have other issues that drive business decisions, investors, Wall Street, analysts, those types of things. And so you could be the right fit, the right number, and at the end of the day, they wouldn't hire you because of the other outsources that are driving them to make a decision. So we're looking for that privately held company. We're actually pretty horizontal. We work with over 25, 30 different industries. We work with wholesale supply companies, insurance companies, financial management companies, technology companies, trucking companies, warehousing companies, medical companies, basically anybody who sells a product or a service. We stay away from restaurants and retail stores. We find that those markets have too many variables that drive the success of their business, and most of those CEOs have lack of control over their business because they have a high employee rate that's usually a 1099 or a contracted title basis. So what we try to do is somebody selling, you know, wholesale supplies or could be trucking or warehousing, but somebody who sells a product or service, business to business, we're looking for a CEO's privately held company of $2 million to $200 million, and my business coaches work within about 100-mile radius of their office.
Okay, is there a special resource that you have found to deliver better quality leads, names, addresses, phone numbers than others? Like, where do you get the names from?
We've actually tried about all the services, Hoover's, InfoUSA. Right now, there's an entire market mix going on. InfoUSA actually is buying up all the database companies in the United States, and many times you may actually use a database company who gives you names and actually coming from InfoUSA directly. So what you're going to find is most of the database companies are really about average. They have about an 80 to 85% accuracy in mailing and accuracy of names. A better way to potentially find a mailing list, if you don't use one of the large companies like InfoUSA, is to buy Trade Journal Magazine mailing list. So if you're going to be selling or try to sell manufacturers in a 100-mile radius, go to a national manufacturing magazine and buy their mailing list for 100 miles within your geography that you're working in and actively ask for the CEO names. It's very inexpensive. You can generally buy 1,000 names with mailing addresses and telephone numbers, somewhere from around $30 to $75 per 1,000 names if you do it that way. So if you're trying to sell, you know, swimming pool manufacturers, what you want to do is pick the trade journal industry that you're working with and then actively contact them and ask them to sell people. And you can actually segment by title, by geography, and by industry the types of people you like to find.
Okay, so when you address that Federal Express envelope with the letter inside, I want to talk more details about that. What do you have? Do you have the company name, the CEO's name, mailing address?
So you have that on the outside. We do not put our company name on the outside. We put our return mailing address so they don't know who the company is. We also use what's called a lumpy mail model, where we'll throw something inside there physically to force them to see that there's something different than just the letter.
What do you put in for the lumpy mail?
On every four book, it could be a book. It could be literally just a lock. We actually done that. You know, we have bubble wrap put in there.
Just to make it lumpy. But you don't tie it into the letter. As you can see, I've included some
bubble. We look at that, and sometimes the lumpy mail, if you look at some of the historical examples, they're kind of corny. We're dealing with a CEO, so we got you stuck in some bubble wrap and the letter, and it's a FedEx letter. It costs you $10, but you know, at the end of the day, if you're trying to sell a contract to a client, it might be worth five or six figures, you know, the ROI is there.
So are you doing this overnight FedEx, or red or blue?
Generally, it's either red or blue, just depends on the market model, but generally it's 1 or 2 days delivery. Now, if you want to reduce your cost on the potential market model, you can go to the United States Post Office here, at least in the States, and you can get a hard box letter that they will send. It looks like a FedEx letter, but the box, it costs about $4 to get there in 3 days.
Really? In the U.S. Post Office?
Yes, it has the same effect of looking like a FedEx letter.
It's a small box?
It's a box letter. It looks like a FedEx letter, but it's actually $4, and it's a 3-day mail. It guarantees 3 days. So the value, of course, is that the studies indicate, this is independent studies and third-party research firms, that overnight letters are the first thing people open. So if you get an overnight letter that appears to be an overnight, in fact, it's a 3-day for $4 in the United States, now you're reducing your production cost and marketing by 80% and having the same effect.
All right, so tell me about the letter. Is it printed on a laser strip printer? Take me inside that bag.
High-quality paper that's heavy bond.
What color?
Generally, it's white or pale yellow. It's signed in blue ink.
Personally?
It is signed personally. It has a business card attached. It's a 2-page letter asking for an appointment and outlining some of the testimonials of client discussions that we've had in bullet format. We use a traditional direct mail approach with a heading at the top, indentation, no paragraph longer than 7 lines. You know, benefits results driven. We offer a guarantee in writing, and we have a PS at the end.
What's a guarantee?
We offer 100% money back return. You're not totally satisfied.
And what's a PS?
The PS is contact us immediately. We have a special program going on. I'd like to chat with you about the maybe appropriate fit for your XYZ company.
So call to action is a telephone call?
It is.
Okay, now where does the call come into?
The call comes into the actual consultant who sent the letter.
Oh, I see. So if you have consultants who are sending these out, and it comes right back to them.
That's right. The program comes up on with myself, but also I have 28 CEO coaches who sell them to the market.
I got you. Okay. Call comes back into the consultant. What are your consultants trained to say when that call comes in?
They're trained really just to give them a small 5-minute overview of the company, our history, again, give them some testimonials and some client examples, and then to sell them on an appointment for 20 minutes.
Why do consultants out there make the mistake when a call comes in that they try and sell their consulting over the phone? Why is that a mistake?
It's because because most of them don't understand that. All consultants suspect it best because most consultants are very poor. Most consultants don't know what they're doing. And most consultants either charge incorrectly and really are not results driven. And if you talk to anybody who's ever hired a consultant, most consultants are pretty fluffy. They'll say, hey, you need to increase your company value. Well, you tell that to a CEO and you look at it and say, okay, now how do I do it? So what ends up happening is most consultants do not have a good reputation with market executives based on the predecessors they've worked with or their peers that work with. So at the end of the day, they're making a judgment call not so much about you individually, but about all the people who preceded you. So you have to really drive the results first, set up an appointment one-on-one to actively engage them intellectually. You know, at the top of your head, there's a part of your brain called Broca. It was discovered by this person by the name of Paul Broca, who was a neurologist in France. And what they found is we as individuals get too many inbound sensory devices on an ongoing basis, and Broca sometimes in our brain goes to sleep when they're talking to marketing people or salespeople. Well, in some ways, you have to slap Broca and say, hey, wake up, you're not paying attention. I'm different. And so instead of trying to sell them over the phone, sales is a sequential process. You need to go through the steps. So the letter is the introduction. Your phone call outbound to them is an action step in your part, trying to get them to take another action step, or they call you inbound. Your goal is not to sell at that point. Your goal is to get to the next sales sequence step, which is let's meet, let's chat about our program and services, and let's find out how we can help you.
What are you instructing your coaches, and what drivers are they pushing on that call to set the appointment?
We set up strategic questions to ask CEOs about their business model to prove to them that they don't know what they're doing and they have problems. One of the elements that you have to deal with when you're coaching CEOs is that there's king in the kingdom syndrome, where all of them think they know what they're doing. You know, they can be a very successful business financially and be making a lot of mistakes, and that's an ingredient in understanding coaching. Many times cash hides mistakes. You could deal with a $10 million CEO business, he's pulling out $1 million a year. Last year he did $9 million, so he's very happy. Well, fact is, he's actually making so many mistakes that he should be a $100 million company pulling out $5 million, but he doesn't know any better. So you have a very short window to communicate your value up front on the phone, that you confirm with them that you know more about their business than they do, or that there are things going on in their business that they should know that they don't know. So we have a series of questions depending on the market industry that we're dealing with that we ask them to understand the problems of their industry and help them actively resolve those problems. So we start asking questions. We have a quick introduction of who we are. We start asking them very pointed questions about their business model to see if they understand the problem.
Can we do a little role play to see that, Jerry?
Sure.
Hi, Paul. This is John Smith here from ABC Spruce. How are you doing? I got your letter in the mail.
Great. Well, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thank you.
Right. I appreciate the time to chat a little bit. What I'd like to do is just talk to you a little bit about our program and what we do with other CEOs like yourself. And if it's a good fit, what I'd like to do is see if you might sit down and chat about 20 minutes a little bit more in detail. You know, my company, the Value Forward Group, is the world's largest CEO coaching company in the small to medium-sized marketplace. We work with CEOs like yourself on a daily basis, and what we do is help them analyze their business holistically, like financial management, marketing, strategy, and sales, the holistic approach based on best practices. And then based on that, what we do is give them appropriate recommendations on how to increase corporate revenue and reduce operating expenses. And we've done this for the last 8 years. And so based on that, what I'd like to do is see if you and I can get together for about 20 minutes.
Okay, sure. We're going to do this by phone or in person?
Well, I'd like to do this in person if you have the appropriate availability in your schedule. Can you and I get together next week, say, Wednesday, 2 o'clock at your office?
Are you going to try and tell me something?
Well, actually, I don't know if we're a good fit. You know, we look at clients on a one-to-one basis. We want to make sure that it's a good fit from your point, but also from our point. So it's more of an introduction to each other. You know, we're not a good fit. It's fine. We shake hands and we walk away. But, you know, what we do bring to the table, though, is a pretty unusual approach. And we do offer 100% money back guarantee. If you're not satisfied, there's no investment cost for you once we're done. We can return all fees except for expenses.
I've dealt with other consultants. I've had a lot of calls from consultants who even hired some. They didn't do much good for us. But how are you guys different before we meet?
Well, I think, first of all, I'd be surprised if any of those other consultants gave you 100% money back guarantee. There's no fine print. It's basically if you're satisfied or not, 30 days after your engagement is done. So that's the first thing. Did the other companies give you actually a 100% money back guarantee?
No, they did not.
Well, usually they wouldn't because they're intimidated that you may not be happy. But we're confident since we've been in business 8 years and worked with over 500 CEOs like yourself, and we're pretty confident that you're pretty happy about it. But, you know, I will tell you, our approach is different. It's called the value forward method. You know, most people are going to come in like a coach in sales or marketing or strategy. But that's a silo approach. You know, the way you grow your business and make more money is by integrating your company together so the company is focused on revenue growth, not just the departments. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to come in, analyze your business holistically, take it apart brick by brick, Lego by Lego, and then put it all back together again and give you appropriate recommendations that are very granular. One of the things that people say most about consultants is they're all fluffy and they don't really help you. We're not like that. We're going to tell you very specifically the action steps you need to make more money.
Are you all going to do it for us, or is my team going to do it?
We're actually going to work in tandem, because what we do is we're like the coach or facilitator. We're going to assign basic action steps to you and your team. You'll let us know what those team members will be involved with us, and then we're going to facilitate recommendations with them. And like a school teacher, we're going to give you guys a lot of homework, and then you're going to get back the homework that we give you based on those recommendations, and then we work together in tandem. Because if we do all the work, then nobody buys in. And what we're looking for is a total transformation of your company to turn it into a revenue-producing machine.
When we meet, is it going to be 20 minutes, or are we going to need more time than that?
20 minutes is fine. You're a busy guy. Don't waste your time. And again, we just want to make sure it's a good fit from our part, and you're part at the same time. So that's not.
That sounds great. All right, let's do it. All right, so you set the appointment. Now, let me ask you a question. Is it really going to be 20 minutes?
Yes,
it is.
Yes.
So you can go in there and do your initial analysis in 20 minutes?
We don't do the initial analysis. We take it through a series of some questions that we ask. It pinpoints them immediately that they don't know what's going on in their own company. And so what we end up doing at that point is then talking about the actual proposal and program, then give them a price point based on the size of the company and the program that we're going to deliver.
All right, so in 20 minutes, your coaches are going to meet with them. Let's say we set the appointment up. Your coach goes out, or you go out and you meet with the owner. You sit down. What's the first thing you're going to do?
We're going to introduce ourselves. We're going to say thank you very much for taking the appointment. We're going to give them a 5-minute overview of the company history. You know, most people, what they do is they go in with a PowerPoint, and, you know, the CEO's already asleep. We don't use any electronic overheads because they're so used to seeing that material. That is sort of anti-client. So we do not do any overheads. We do not hand out any brochures at that point. And we want them to focus on us as a consultant.
Face-to-face, I bought two people talking.
Yeah, the goal is to become a business peer, not a vendor.
Tell me the difference between that.
Well, when you're a vendor, they treat you like a vendor, and they treat you basically as a subordinate. When you're a business peer, you're basically like a doctor or a surgeon. We go in, and we tell them things that they may not want to hear. I'm like a surgeon. You know, you don't need a bestseller book to learn how to lose weight. I can tell you how to lose weight right now. Stop drinking beer, stop eating pizza, and work out more. People need to learn that they have to be told that. So I am a surgeon. When I go into a company, I tell the CEO things they don't want to hear, things their subordinates are intimidated to hear, but I help them fix their company. And sometimes they don't like it, but I tell them up front, I'm here to help them. I'm not here to be subordinated.
All right, so you're going to meet with them for this 20-minute appointment. You give them a 5-minute overview of your company. In that overview, are you qualifying yourself, establishing credibility?
Yeah, I talk about I've started a couple of the companies, the kind of clients we work with, the history about us, all the publications we've been written in, but it's very short. Most people go in, this is a mistake also, they only start talking about themselves for 25 minutes. You have to remember, it's not about you, it's about the buyer.
Okay, let me ask you this. Let's say you have a coach who doesn't have much history for himself. Does he use and borrow the credibility of you and your firm?
He does. Actually, the way we do it is he becomes part of the Value Forward Network, and he describes himself as part of the Value Forward Network. It's a worldwide CEO coaching consortium made up of former CEOs, VPs of sales, VPs of marketing, and VPs of strategy, and we have offices in 5 countries. I'm one of the certified coaches.
Okay, see, this is one of the biggest questions and concerns I get, and I'm sure you hear it all the time. Is they're worried about their credibility when they go in?
There's a problem with that, because it's a fallacy that you have to be a CEO to coach CEOs, and that's incorrect. That's totally wrong. I have people who are ex-VPs of sales and senior salespeople who coach $100 million CEOs. What you have to have is knowledge to confirm you know more than they do.
That's where you establish your expertise.
That's correct.
And the question to ask.
There's really 2 types of selling, and most people focus on the wrong side. There's 2 concepts of selling. One is called relationship sales, and the other is called transactional sales. The concept of relationship sales has been promulgated today by books, and by strategies, and by seminars, and it's all totally wrong. There's no scientific evidence to support that. The more you hang with a client, spend time with them, take them to dinner, or buy them lunch, or talk to them, that they become a client. There's no evidence to support that. What you need to focus on when you're selling the first time to a prospect is called transactional sales. Transactional sales says you force the prospect to take action steps with you during the sales cycle to prove to you that they're a qualified buyer. At that point, if they're qualified, I'm prepared to work with them and walk through the sales cycle. Now, at the end of the sales cycle, they may not buy from me. That's a separate sales issue, but I didn't waste my time. The problem is most people don't do that. What they do, they hang in there for the relationship, and they assume that the more I'm around, the more time I spend with the prospect, the more apt they are to buy from me. Statistically, there's no evidence to support that. In fact, in most sales, relationships don't even start to the second sale. Most people don't realize that.
Right, okay, let's talk about this transactional step. You've done the introduction. Now you have a series of questions, which is going to hopefully let them know that they don't really know as much as they think they know. Tell me about that. For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
Well, we'll start talking to him about the business model. Hey, Daniel, let me ask you a couple questions based on some of the best practices that we're aware of. Tell me, do you know what your return on investment is for the recent trade show that you spent $100,000 at in New York?
What percentage ever know?
1%? So they don't know. I'll ask them, do you know what the number of sales steps it takes for your salespeople on premises to sell your product or service? They don't know. Let me just keep walking down there. Do you know how many leads your website generates on a daily basis?
They don't know.
Do you know what the cost per lead is to get one sale? They don't know. See, most businesses are run emotionally and by sheep from the head, not metrically, so they don't know. And what happens is, and this doesn't matter if it's a $1 million company or $100 million company, there's an assumption by the senior executive CEO, the principal, the owner, that the department managers I hire know these things.
Will they say that? Will they say, well, I have to get with my marketing guy to get you that?
Actually, it's more interesting. Sometimes they have to go get them, and then we'll ask them, and they don't know.
Really?
Yeah, it gets embarrassing at that point. But, we'll ask them, okay, hey, John, you went to 7 trade shows last year, you spent $150,000. Do you know what the marketing return on investment was for the show in New York? Do you know what your cost per lead at the trade show booth was? They don't know.
Well, let me ask you this. Before you make that meeting, I'm hearing that you're doing some research before you go out and meet them.
No, that's not true.
Well, how do you know they've got a trade show?
Because just about every company that has a product or service goes to an industry trade show.
Okay, so on the meeting of the appointment, you're told you really don't do any research on the company.
Yeah, that's a mistake that most people make. And I'll tell you what kind of research you should do. I'll play 5 minutes to establish that you're an expert in the industry. So again, this goes against most sales methodologies. But most sales methodologies are based on salespeople's poor sales skills. And so what ends up happening is they take a elongated sales process because they don't know what they're doing. So what they'll normally do is get the same company to size, they'll go to their website, they'll look at their press releases, they'll look at their annual reports, the public company, they read the Wall Street Journal and say, wow, I know everything about this company. Then they go sit in front of the executive and they tell them what's wrong. There's a problem. There's ego in the boardroom. You start telling somebody what you think is their problem without them verbalizing it, they're not going to publicly say to you if it's true. You could be reading in the Wall Street and the lobby that the company's going bankrupt because their labor costs are increasing. And you say that to the CEO and you say, you know what? Well, you shouldn't believe everything you read in the Wall Street Journal. See, the problem is when you do too much research on a client, you bring a predisposition of perception of what you think their problem is and then you blurt it out. That's not how you sell clients. You tend to verbalize what the problem is.
So that's why you don't integrate a research step in there, because the consultants acting like they know everything. You create resistance.
Right.
You go in and be a good listener.
That's correct.
How important is listening in this business?
Actually, you're going to find this interesting. In the selling process, less than more. Kind of contradictory to what I just said. But in the beginning stages, you're going to tell them, here's the problem that most people think. They think relationship selling is like, there's other methods out there called like questioning by sales. That's another mistake. If you're a CEO coach, you're supposed to know how to help them. You need to tell them what their problems are once you've done some basic questioning. Most salespeople don't. That's the mistake. You want to close a CEO, you act like a CEO. So if the CEO says something to you during your discussion of trying to sell them, it makes no sense. You've got to call them on it or else they're not going to go with you. I can't tell you how many times I've told CEOs, George, based on what you just said, there's no factual information to confirm that. What you're saying is definite. That's not an actual observation. And in fact, the way you're doing today is wrong. See, if you're a CEO coach, you have to act like it. There's a concept that we teach called being professionally blunt. Not blunt, but professionally blunt. So back to like a doctor. Okay, you have a choice. You walk into the emergency room and there's this warm and fuzzy general practitioner. Your eye just fell out of your head. It's rolling down the hallway. You scoop up your eye. You run into the emergency room. You walk over to the warm and fuzzy general practitioner, or you talk to the little bit arrogant eye doctor sitting in the corner who's put back 1,000 eyes. Those doctors know how to help you. Most people act like a warm, fuzzy general practitioner. They think being nice, being warm, being fuzzy gets business. That's totally false. And that's sort of like the holy grail salespeople. If they like you, they will buy from you. Every person who's listening today that had prospects who liked them, who made themselves available, who took your emails, your phone calls, your letters, and even had conversations, and they never bought. People buy from people in the business world who help them. They don't have to like you. They don't have to invite you to their daughter's wedding. They just have to trust you. That's different. Based on your ability to help them.
So let's get back to the question. Do you ask these questions? They'll bring in their sales manager. They don't know. You're not trying to embarrass them, but does it get uncomfortable where you feel like you're taking it a little too far?
No, there's a degree of where you go, because they try to do a survey of questions across all the areas that we've implemented. So less than financial management questions, less than strategy questions. Like, for instance, how did you determine what your price should be for your new product? Well, we went to the web, we looked at our competitors, and we decided that's what we should do. We should be in the middle.
Is your coach taking notes?
Yes. You know, that's interesting, because we have a best practices model that says if you make your pricing on basis of your competitors, statistically, you're not going to be as successful. They're going to say why, and then we'll go and give them an example why. So the goal here is to be the surgeon who knows how to fix the problems. And don't be concerned that you're being more aggressive. If you go into a privately held company or a public company, and there's a CEO, a president, or an owner, and they have somebody working for them, those managers, okay, probably have made maybe even some of the same suggestions that you have. But at the end of the day, now you're telling them they need to fix it. If you act passive, then you're like their employees. How many VPs of sales, VPs of marketing, VPs of strategy, or, you know, they could be managers of sales or managers of marketing, actively had given suggestions to the boss and just gave up because the boss was a difficult boss? They said, you know, I make enough money, I only have to deal with them until we can company meeting. I'm just going to forget it. He doesn't know what he's doing, but I'm being paid fairly. So you're not that person. You're going in and you're saying, listen, Mr. CEO and Ms. CEO, I'm here to help you make your business better. And the fact is, you probably aren't doing it right, and we're going to show you how to make it better. And you may not even like it, but it is going to help you become more wealthy.
When you meet him for the first time and you give him a little background, you don't promise him anything. Do you take it away? Do you say, look, you know, I don't know if we're fit, but we'll sit down and take some time to talk with each other and see if there's a match?
That's right. We do not go in and act desperate. We act like maybe they're going to meet our criteria to sell them. It's the other way around. In a transactional sales model, you're forcing the prospect to continually prove to you that they're qualified based on your standards. So just because you're working with a client, the client really has to meet your criteria to move forward. Because if you're just working with people, and that happens with most people in consulting, they take any job, any project, and they just basically have, you know, haphazard results. We focus on driving the performance working with them. I'll give you an example. I have a client at an $87 million company out of New Jersey. It's in a technology staff law business place. I got called by the vice president of sales, who said, my CEO really is kind of a jerk. He doesn't know what he's doing. Revenues are flat and going down. The profits are going down. He's hired other consultants, and he's had a lot of problems with them, but we really need help. And you're the only company we've ever talked to who holistically looked at all those different areas. Because we had a marketing consultant, then we had a strategy consultant, we had a sales consultant, and they fixed pieces of the pie, not the whole pie, and we still have the same problem. And I'd like you to talk to them. So this is up in New Jersey, and I'm located in Atlanta. So instead of going and doing the 20-minute in-person, I actually did it on the phone. I get out of the phone, the conference room, multiple managers in the room listening, and the CEO says, well, you know, my VP sales told me to talk to you, and, you know, I'm really busy, so who are you? So I gave my little pitch, and he says, okay, talk and help me. He's basically barking questions to me. And I said, I'm very specific, like, what to help you grow your business? He says, well, I know what I've been doing. We're in business 30 years, it's a family-run business, and he's grossing $80 million. He's still putting out a couple million a year. He's doing okay. But he said, you know, we really know what we're doing. I said, well, based on my conversation with your VP of sales, your revenues are flat and your profits are down for the last 3 years. I really don't consider that doing good, do you? He's quiet. So the room was quiet. And he said, well, yeah, okay. I said, so don't you want to change? He said, well, of course. And I said, so why don't you let somebody outside of your company help you? He said, you know, I've hired guys like you before. Now, when a person makes a judgment call about you as an advisor, you have an opportunity. You are either submissive and melt to the ground and agree with them, or you call on it and tell them specifically what you are or are not. And I said, no, you're totally wrong. I said, you've never met anybody like us. We're the only company that focuses in this area based on data and research and best practices of integrating marketing and strategy and sales and financial management into one program. I said, everybody else you talked to were just specialists in one area. I said, well, I guess you're right. He says, well, how is that difference? So I told him the difference. And he says, I just don't really think we need you. I said, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe you're a bad fit for us. I don't know if you're a good fit for us as well. He says, you know, I never talked to anybody like you before. You're not trying to sell me. I said, no, of course not. I'm trying to help you. Here's the difference.
Let me ask you, why do you call your guys coaches and not consultants?
There's three terminologies in advisors. There's trainers, coaches, and consultants. They all have different pictures in the brain of the buyer. And you got to be careful with the words that you use, because when you say specific words, it paints pictures and brochures in the brain of the buyer. So you have to be very strategic in the words you use and the words you don't use. So you just don't opt to fam a consultant. A coach is somebody who's going to guide and direct. And a trainer is somebody who teaches.
Would you suggest my HMA consultants maybe call themselves HMA coaches?
Yeah, I would recommend that, certainly. And today we're from the word training and consulting. You know, my company, my coaches, we all do training to some degree and consulting to some degree. But we're CEO coaches. By the way, by inserting that title CEO in front of your description of yourself, you designate exactly the entry point into your organization. I didn't say we're VP coaches. I didn't say we're director coaches. I said we're CEO coaches.
Yeah, that's good. That's strong.
But remember that the words you use paint that brochure in the brain of the buyer, and you really have an opportunity to paint the words or the pictures correctly or not correctly. And what happens is by using a generic term or by using the term that you use, we're going to jump to conclusions based on that. And it's very easy to prove that. You can just call yourself something else and they jump to a conclusion.
So you're in the 20-minute meeting. You've made your introduction. You haven't promised them anything. You've positioned it where they've got to kind of prove that they're the right fit for you. Good positioning. You've taken them through the series of questions. Take me towards the end of that appointment.
We're sitting there, and I say, we have eight different programs, and that's what I recommend to anybody who does coaching or advisement. You don't have one program. Have eight different programs. You never discount the prospect. What you do is move them into an alternate program. So I have eight different package programs, depending on what the client's budget is and what they're prepared to pay for that day. So what we do is we pitch our number one program, which is the one I've been describing. And then I throw out the budget price, and I'll tell them that our program, we charge my company $7,500 to $10,000 per day plus expenses.
Let's role play. Let's say we get down towards the end of the questions. I want you to start pitching me on the program.
I say, well, based on what we talked about today, if you wanted to move forward with us, this program will cost you between $25,000 and $40,000. Is that within your budget?
Yeah, what kind of responses do you get?
Well, for a CEO, it's, we don't concern about the budget. Like I said, they always have the money. It's just a question of priority. They might say, oh, that's too much money, or they might say, well, what am I going to get? Or they might say, I need to think about it. It depends on the CEO. When they say, that's within my budget, and we describe it, and we talk about what the budget is, put together a proposal, follow back on to see if we can make the program work for you and I together.
So they say it's within my budget, then that's it, that's the end of the meeting.
Get close right there on the proposal and getting a deal done. Don't start talking anymore. You got a closure right there. If you want to go ahead and describe it, go for it.
When he says that's within my budget, are you assuming that's a sale?
I'm about 95% closing ratio in person.
If someone says that's within my budget,
I have a 95% closing ratio in general. If I get a 20-minute meeting, I close 95%.
Right, but you consider that a closed sale because you haven't gotten back with the proposal.
No, but the proposal at that point is really just criteria for detail.
Okay, so that's an assumed sale right there. You close. If he says, wow, that's a lot of money, what are you going to do?
So what I do is I go into what's called analogy selling. One of the problems you have when you're selling clients is that they're making judgment calls of what you sell based on their knowledge. That's a problem because sometimes they're not very educated about what you sell, or they have misperceptions of what other people say or do or sell simultaneously. So what you have to do is come up with examples of what that investment, return on investment, would be as compared to other investments that they would make. So if I was in a $5 million company and I said, well, I'll sell $30,000, that's a lot of money. I said, you know, you could go pay $30,000 to one headhunter to get one salesperson to may not be here in 6 months. You could take $30,000 and buy a copy machine, or you could get $30,000 to hire a secretary to answer the phone. The question is, are those investments going to give you increased revenue like I am? They have to use analogies because they don't know what the potential is of the return.
Do you use those word packages there?
I always do.
What are some other analogies?
It depends on the size of the company and the size of the proposal. So we take the price of what you're trying to sell, you look at the business, and you look for what type of investment they would make. One of the things people usually have a concern about is if you're trying to sell something, well, they're going to compare it to something else, and they're going to box me into a commodity position. The key here is to add value to keep yourself out of a commodity position. So you're always going to talk about the return of the value, but compare it to other things that have less value. If you buy a coffee machine for $30,000, there's no value there. You can buy those anywhere. You can get a secretary against the phone. If it was an $80,000 proposal, talking to a $10 million company, a $20 million company within a certain industry, I would try to understand what would they spend $80,000 on. They're a trucking company. If you buy another truck, what is that going to do to increase the total revenue of all your other 100 trucks that you have? You have to use something from their background. Now, I did tell you before, I can tell you how to become an expert in any industry in 5 minutes.
Tell me that, and then remind me, I want to go over some more objections. But go ahead, expert in any industry.
By the way, this should be you at this particular point in time to understand their business. You have to understand that there are many ways that you can communicate value, but one of the primary ways is to know the problems of the specific industry that you're sitting in front of. But if you're selling horizontally to many markets, you can't be an expert in pharmaceuticals and wholesale supply, insurance, healthcare, and oil and gas all in the same day, unless you follow the next step I'm going to give you. The easiest way to become an expert in any business is to go to the National Association website of that particular industry. So there is actually a National Manufacturing Association in the United States. There's a National Oil and Gas Association. There's a National Retail Association. There's a National Insurance Association. You go to the corporate website for the association. Now, every association has an annual trade show. On that website will be a brochure you can download for the upcoming annual trade show. What I want you to do is download the actual annual trade show brochure, and then I want you to read the name of the breakout sessions and the workshops that the association is putting on for their members. The name of those workshops and breakout sessions are the business problems of their industry. Because that's what they're doing, is servicing their clients, which are their members, which happen to be the prospects you're selling. So if you go to the National Manufacturing Association, you download their brochure, and they have workshops to say, you know, how to reduce operating efficiency costs in the manufacturing plant. Guess what? That's the problem you should be talking about. And it's hard for the prospect to conflict with what you're saying because you're basically confirming that their trade association has done the research on it.
And it matches up. He knows those are the problems.
You can even quote it. You could say, you know, recently the National Manufacturing Association said one of the top areas of concerns for CEOs like yourself is managing operational efficiencies on the manufacturing floor. Where'd you get it? I got from the brochure that I downloaded 5 minutes before I walked in.
Very good. And that's what you train your coaches to do.
I do.
What about the objection where a CEO may be hesitant because he's worried about your coach or you working with him is going to take a lot of time?
Well, what we do is we talk about that we are really going to eliminate a lot of the time requirements on their part, because once we've done the due diligence and analysis of where the problems are and where the gaps are in their ability to collect revenue, we're going to give them very specific strategic action steps to take.
All right, so let's role play. Paul, this all sounds good. I'm just so busy. I see this is going to just take up a lot of my time and my manager's time. Is that true?
No, actually it's not, because what we do is we have a database of best practices that we do all the analysis on, so what we're actually going to do is do all the labor of analyzing all the areas that can be improved, and then we're going to give you detailed instructions specifically department by department, action step by action step of what to take. So it minimizes the interference with your day-to-day operations. But at the end of the day, you want to make money. We're just going to help you make more money.
Okay. What are some other objections you commonly see?
Sometimes they'll say, I just really can't afford that, Paul. That's not within our budget range. So what we've done is put together 8 different packages based on different lower amounts or higher amounts, depending on the middle package that we offer. And what we do is we migrate them to a lower package, which has lower labor efforts on our part. We don't discount. So I would say, you know, well, can you tell me what your budget range would be? Paul, it's not $40,000, it's $15,000. So then I have a program that might be in that range. And I'll say, well, you know, we do have another program that might fit your requirements. This is what the program is. That would be approximately about $15,000. How would that help?
So the highest price program is very comprehensive, all the departments. What's the next level down?
We have 8 programs in total. We have 6 programs which are on-site consulting, and we have 2 programs which are long-distance coaching. So our on-site consulting programs, we charge $7,500 to $10,000 per day, plus expenses for companies as small as $1 million a year. And then our long-distance coaching programs, we do long-distance telephone coaching for CEOs by telephone for 1 hour a week on the phone, unlimited email to ask questions, and we charge $3,000 to $5,000 a month, and usually the minimum of a 3-month contract, but probably a 12-month contract. Our 8th program we offer is long-distance coaching. We offer coaching by teleseminar. Are you familiar with that?
Sure, tell me about that.
We actually have the largest inventory of unique teleseminars available. We have 17 totally separate, self-contained, 2-hour teleseminars that all my coaches get as well. Each one is 2 hours long. The coach gets a PowerPoint that they read, which has 50 to 75 slides that they read over the telephone, and then individually each attendee gets a workbook which has 20 to 25 pages, and then they follow along on that particular subject. and then our coaches can have to go to the client site to actually do it from their office or their house or their vacation home.
Actually, these PowerPoint presentations were all developed and designed by you, and the coaches have these available to do the coaching with the CEOs.
That's right. And some might be on how to do a strategic plan, how to do a marketing plan, how to be successful at trade shows, how to increase your financial management. So we will hold a session with them. Now, we charge $2,000 to $3,000 for 1 2-hour teleseminar with a maximum of 30 people. As an example, so we'll go back to the clients. You know, I appreciate everything that you said, but what we really want is an annual program. My budget is $25,000. What can you do for me? What we'll do is we'll say we can do once a month a 2-hour teleseminar. We can pick every month, you know, 1 out of 17 that we have. We'll hold a 2-hour conference call with you and the rest of your management team on various subjects, and it'll be $1,000 a month. We'll sign a contract. You can pay with a credit card at one point.
So you plan to sign them up for the 12 months?
For $24,000 for 2 hours a month.
And so everyone calls in. Is it all just by phone?
It's all by phone. That's correct. If you used to do webinars, we found that webinars distract from the retention of the material because you have too many sensory devices going on. You've got the webinar going on across the internet in a PowerPoint format. People are listening, and there's also cadence going on based on the speaker in their own presentation. And if they have a workbook and take a note and they're watching the screen and they're listening, you'll find that many times people are not retaining the information. So we went back to teleseminars, and all of our workbooks have 75% of the content that the coach has, forcing the people to pay attention to get the rest of the material.
Please continue to part two. You're listening to an interview on Michael South's HardToFindSeminars.com.